surface until enough of it sticks to them to give them a baseline again. If you take all of someone's gravity, on the other hand, or even most of someone's gravity, they'll make more, and they'll keep making more, which means you can harvest more. You can pull their gravity away again and again and again, because they'll always generate another batch. It's a renewable resource. What does this have to do with me not being able to switch back to human? Sam demanded. Someone's harvesting her gravity. Celia switched her attention to him, which felt like nothing so much as mercy. She was giving me space to absorb what I was about to hear. When you lost your luck, you lost your barrier against whatever's funneling away her gravity. Or something. I don't know what they're taking, but they're taking something. And whatever it is, it's similar enough to the energy you used to transform that when it felt you, it took that too. The good news is that it's an energy you generate on your own. If you stop touching her, it'll grow back. How long? Asked Sam gruffly. Celia shook her head. I don't know. Sam, let go of my ankle. He turned to look at me, eyes going wide. I smiled wanly. Your tail, it's wrapped around my ankle. You need to let it go. You're still touching me. But... He stopped, catching himself, and unwound his tail, whisking it out of my reach. I felt suddenly unmoored. I leaned away, pressing myself against the wall. If Sam hadn't been between me and the rest of the kitchen, I would have gotten up and started pacing. Celia, why did you react like that when you touched my arm? Because whatever sapping your energy and his energy tried to take mine. Only I pulled it back, and it didn't know how to deal with it. It was tug of war with something I don't know and couldn't see, and I did not like it. Celia shook her head. Not one damn bit. Whatever trouble you're in this time, I don't know where it came from, and I don't know how to fix it. But I'm a jink. If you break your luck, I can help. If you press your luck, I can at the very least point and laugh before the great gray cloud of karma settles around your head and devours you whole. I don't do weird, unseen, mystery, energy-sucking bullshit, which is what this is. Celia leaned back in her chair, a little farther away from me. You need help. Not from me. Wait. Sam looked deeply frustrated. We both turned to him. He looked at me, then at Celia. I want to be sure I have this right. You're saying someone did something to Annie that makes her some sort of energy vampire? Yes and no, said Celia. She's not the one sapping energy, and she's not keeping it either. She's more like a funnel attached to a vacuum cleaner than the vacuum cleaner itself. All the energy is passing through her and going somewhere else. And losing my luck is why this started happening now when it wasn't happening to me before? Celia nodded. Luck is like the body's ozone layer. It protects us from a lot of the ambient energies in the world. This funnel? It's inside Annie, under her luck, sapping her energy. I couldn't reach you until your luck was gone. That's part of why jinxes are dangerous. If someone could take all the world's luck away, we'd just be ghosts walking around in bodies we hadn't figured out how to put down yet. Ghosts. I sat up a little straighter. Can ghosts see luck? Jink ghosts can, said Celia. They are nasty when they decide to haunt somebody. Human ghosts can't. So Mary wouldn't have noticed Sam's luck going away, I said. It could have disappeared last night. No, it couldn't have, said Celia. This time, Sam and I turned to look at her. She shrugged. He's too clean, or was until I flicked some of my own luck onto him. Whatever took his luck took it all, and took it within the last few hours. After that, it would only have been a matter of time before the energy that fuels his transformations ran out, if he was touching you. Sam had been touching me all day, from the time we got to Lowryland until he'd swept those kids out of the path of yet another collapse. I was starting to think Lowryland had an infrastructure problem. Or maybe it had a luck problem. Do inanimate things have luck? I asked. I told you, it's like dust. It sticks to everything. You'd think a table wouldn't have much for being lucky, but everything wants to exist. Everything wants to be treated well, to be remembered, to endure, even if the wanting isn't what we'd recognized as conscious. This glass isn't alive. She held up her drink. That doesn't mean breaking would be good for it. So, on some level, the glass wants to be unbroken. If it has good luck, when I drop it, it'll land on the carpet. And if it misses and hits the linoleum and I have good luck, I won't step on any of the shards. Luck is a lot more complicated than I expected it to be, I complained. Celia gave me a look that was half sympathetic, half entertained. We tell jink kids luck is like math. You start by learning to add the good and subtract the bad, and then you learn how to keep the sums from ever getting too negative or too positive, and then you start doing calculus. I should introduce you to my cousin Sarah, I said, slumping in my chair. She thinks the world is made of math, too. Because it is, said Celia. Yes, things have luck. Why? We've been having weird equipment failures at Lowryland lately, I said. There was the parade that Fern and I told you about. There was the deep fryer that blew. And the reason Sam shifted forms was to save some kids from getting squished when one of the fake trees collapsed. Those things are supposed to be unbreakable. If something's messing with the luck, pulling enough luck off of the inanimate could make it vulnerable, said Celia thoughtfully. Or it could be the sinkhole effect.
Please don't use fancy terms like you think we're supposed to know them, said Sam sourly. I just met you. I'm not hugely comfortable with any of this, and I really don't want to need a phrase book to know what the hell you're talking about.
Celia sighed, putting her glass down. Okay. Something stripped all your luck away. We're agreed on that, right? Yes, I said, before Sam could say anything else. He was in a bad mood, and I couldn't blame him. I was in a pretty rotten mood myself, but I'd known Celia long enough to trust her, and he hadn't. Right now, that was making all the difference in the world. I missed the feeling of his tail around my ankle and his hand in mine. I would have felt a little less unmoored, I thought, if something had been holding me down. I also missed the fire in my fingers. If anything should have brought it surging back, it was this. But it wasn't coming because it wasn't there. Because someone had been stealing it away from me. If that someone was Colin, or anyone else from his little magical nursery school, I was going to show him that there was more than one way to set somebody on fire. When luck is removed, it creates... Ugh, Zeus, I don't have the words for this shit. It creates a blank spot, and for a little while, the shock of the removal will keep that blank spot blank. Hence you still being effectively a null luck zone when you got here. Your body hadn't had the time to recover and start gathering luck again. With me?
Sure, said Sam. Why the fuck not?
Celia didn't look like she appreciated his answer, but she pressed on. I silently vowed to buy her ice cream or something. Once the shock wears off, the system will panic and begin gathering luck from any place that it can find it. Which means bad luck, right? I asked.
Yes and no.
For a moment, Sam and I were united in glaring at her. Cynthia grimaced. I told you this was complicated, she said. Look, if you're talking free-range luck, the bad kind is infinitely more common, and hence infinitely easier to find. But someone who has no luck won't just suck up the free-range stuff. They'll start pulling it off things that can't fight back. Inanimate things. Hang on, I said. So, what you're saying is that if what happened to Sam has happened to other people, and those people went to Lowryland, they might have pulled the luck off of parts of the park trying to rebuild their own?
If they stayed long enough, yes.
Celia looked grim. Which would mean those things would start gathering free-range luck, since they'd lack the self-awareness to go looking for intentional replacement luck, and they'd wind up with a big load of badness. I rubbed my face with one hand. I need to go.
Where?
Asked Sam.
I still can't transform.
I know, I said. But I need to get back to Lowryland. Chapter 18. Never gamble with anything you're not willing to lose. The house doesn't always win, but there are some chances not worth taking. Mary Dunlavey. Lakeland, Florida,
at the warehouse home of the Lakeland ladies.
No, said Celia calmly, taking another swig of her lemonade. She swallowed, sighed, and added, I wish like hell I could risk something stronger. But you know what they say about day drinking. Once you start, it's a hop, skip, and a jump to waking up one day as a bartender in some crappy coastal tourist resort, shaking your denim-clad rear for tips. I like bartenders. I like denim miniskirts. But wow, do I hate tourists. Sam and I both stared at her blankly. Finally, in a hesitant tone, Sam said,
I don't think anyone says that. Like, ever? I don't even believe that you've said that before just now.
Celia shrugged. Yep, here we are. My temper was beginning to boil. I narrowed my eyes, looking down the length of my nose at her, and pictured how nice she would look on fire. What do you mean, no?
I mean, no.
Celia looked back at me.
I will not drive you back to Lowryland. I will not tell you which bus to take to get to Lowryland. I will not let you run out of here and ditch me with your fuzzy boyfriend while you go and get yourself killed. This is not a good idea. This is a bad idea.
What makes you so sure I'm going to go and get myself killed? Celia rolled her eyes so hard that for a moment they looked like they were going to pop out of her head and roll away across the floor.
Please. First, I've met you. Second, you're currently a weird energy sink. And third, you have some of the most bizarre luck I've ever seen. You could get yourself killed walking to the 7-Eleven for chocolate milk. And if you run out of here without a plan, you're going to end up dead. And how am I supposed to explain that to Fern?
I'd be more worried about how you were going to explain it to me, said Sam dourly. Annie, why do you want to go back to Lowryland? It sounds like whatever's going on started there and... Crap. I just answered my own question, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. I looked at Celia. How much do you know about human magic users?
Enough to know that I don't know Jack, she said. They make magic, they use magic. Sometimes a lot of things wind up on fire because of their magic, and there's never been a jink who could do what they do.
Makes sense, I said. Humans can't see luck the way jinx can.
Everyone can move luck, but only we can see it.
I paused. Celia?
Yes?
Are you cool with dead people? Celia blinked. There are about 100 different ways I can interpret that question, and none of them actually make sense, she said.
What do you mean exactly?
Annie has dead aunts, said Sam.
Somehow not helping, said Celia.
I need to ask someone a question, and it probably isn't you, I said. Are you cool with dead people?
You mean ghosts? Celia shrugged. I guess. One of my second cousins stuck around being a ghost for a few years before he went off to do whatever comes after ghosting. He was a pretty chill guy. He used to help me sneak into the movies.
Great. I clapped my hands, chanting, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. How many times do I need to tell you that's borderline offensive and not a good way to summon a Mary trailed off mid-word, suddenly realizing that she was in an unfamiliar kitchen, standing in front of a total stranger. It's okay, Aunt Mary, I said. Celia's from my roller derby league.
Technically, no, but what's a little interstate rivalry between friends?
Celia offered Mary a bright smile that was only slightly strained around the edges.
I didn't know I was going to be hosting a party today. I would have done some cleaning up if I had.
I don't care if she's from your roller derby league, pumpkin. Being a derby girl doesn't make somebody cool with the dead. Mary glanced at Sam, only now seeming to see his furry condition. She frowned.
Okay, what the hell is going on?
That's a really long story, and I promise you'll get the whole thing. Probably with footnotes, and I may need to draw some flowcharts to make sure I understand it, but can you please do me a huge favor? I flashed my brightest, most hopeful smile in her direction. Can you see if you can find Aunt Rose?
Why?
Mary's eyes narrowed. Antimony Timpany Price, you will tell me what's going on right now, or so help me—
Something stole all of Sam's luck, and something different is sapping my magic, which is why I can't set anything on fire. And when I touched him after his luck was gone, the thing that's been stealing my magic stole his... whatever the fuck it is that therianthropes use when they transform, so he's currently stuck, all monkeyed out. Which means we can't go anywhere, and he nearly got caught on camera by Lowry security. So I need to talk to Aunt Rose and find out whether a route witch could do any of this, because it's going to make a difference for what happens next. The words poured out of me in a messy rush. Mary stared at me. So did Sam and Celia. I shrugged, spreading my hands helplessly, and said nothing. Mary turned her eyes heavenward. "Sometimes I wonder why I don't move on," she muttered, and vanished. All right. Before the dead woman comes back to my apartment, and what the hell is this day even doing? I want you to explain, snapped Celia. Now. Mary is a crossroads ghost, I said. She always knows where her family is, and she's been with us for 3 generations now. She has a vested interest in me staying alive.
Oh, that's just dandy. Invite the crossroads over for coffee. Sounds great to me.
I shook my head. She's a ghost, not a guardian. She doesn't set up the deals. She speaks on behalf of the person trying to make them, and tries to minimize the damage if she's allowed. No member of my family has gone to the crossroads to make a deal since my grandfather. What had happened to Grandpa Thomas had been enough to make every member of the family since listen when Mary told us to be careful. We liked this dimension. We wanted to stay in it.
Okay, said Celia slowly.
And Rose is... Rose Marshall. Sam turned to stare at me.
Rose Marshall.
I nodded.
The girl in the diner.
They call her that in some places, sure.
The girl in the green silk gown.
I think that one's a little more common on the coasts these days. We don't have as many diners, but yeah, that's her.
The phantom.
Prom date, finished a new voice, as my Aunt Rose appeared in the middle of the kitchen, hands shoved into the back pockets of her faded jeans, head canted at a hard angle. Aunt Mary was a silent presence behind her, watching as Rose said,
Wow, Annie, you went and found a fellow who knew all the stories. Impressive. Did you notice the part where he's a monkey? Because I don't know about you, but that would make a bit of a difference for me.
You're dating your car, I said, and smiled in sweet relief.
Hi, Aunt Rose.
Hi yourself, she said, and smiled back. Like Mary, Rose died young. A lot of ghosts did. Or at least looked like they did. Since their appearance is malleable, the dead tend to settle at whatever age they felt most comfortable when they were alive. A ghost who looks 16 might have died at 16, or might have died at 65. It's hard to say, but they can't look older than they were when they died, because they never wore that face, never lived inside that skin. For Rose and Mary both, the clock stopped before high school ended, and they'll never look old enough to drink. Unlike Mary, with her long white hair and her empty highway eyes, Rose still looks like the kind of girl you might see down at the corner store, drinking a soda and sticking her thumb out for a ride. She usually wears whatever's in with people who actually are the age she appears to be, cycling effortlessly through the fashion spectrum, coming back time and time again to a sort of Bruce Springsteen greaser chic in jeans, white tank top, and sneakers. And jacket, of course. Rose is a hitchhiking ghost, eternally wandering the highways and byways of America, looking for the ride that will get her where she needs to go. She'll never find it. That ride doesn't exist. But she'll have a good time while she tries. They call her the girl in the green silk gown because she died on her way to the prom back in the 1950s. And when things get bad, she appears in the dress she was wearing when her car ran off the road. Seeing her in jeans meant things weren't as bad as they could be. Rose has no obligation to help our family, but she's an honorary aunt for a reason, and she does what she can to keep us out of trouble when we call, which isn't often by mutual agreement. She'll always try to come. She'll always do her best, and we'll always remember that when we call her away from the road, we're calling her away from an afterlife that doesn't have anything to do with us. Not yet. Where she's needed, and valued, and has shit to do. Aunt Rose, this is my friend Celia Mackey, and my... I hesitated. Was I ready to take this step with a family member? More importantly, with a family member who didn't share Mary's inclination toward keeping her cards close to her chest? If Mary was a lockbox, Rose was a loudspeaker, and anything I told her today would wind up getting broadcast to the rest of the family as soon as she saw them. Good. Maybe they'd feel better if they knew I wasn't all by myself, and Sam looked somewhere between wary and miserable, like he'd been waiting for me to repudiate him since the moment he'd realized he could no longer pass for human. Fuck that. This is my boyfriend, Sam Taylor, I said firmly. He's a fury.
Half, said Sam. Hi, second dead aunt.
Rose stuck her pinky in her ear and swiveled it exaggeratedly around.
I'm sorry. I could have sworn you just said my boyfriend, which would imply that you, Annie, have a boyfriend and means a bunch of people have probably lost bets.
Shut up, I said genially. Sam frowned.
Is this because I'm not human, or...
Oh, no, honey. I don't give two shakes of a dead dog's dick about that, and neither will anyone else worth knowing, said Rose. We have all sorts of people in the family, living and dead. You'll fit right in.
It's mostly the idea of Annie dating and all. She always said it was a waste of time.
We've only managed to have 3 dates, I protested. One was at the carnival, one was at a roller derby game, and one was at Lowryland.
So, you found a boyfriend who likes to do the shit you like to do?
Miracles never cease.
Now, Rose sobered. The air in the room seemed chill. Her hands were still shoved into her back pockets, but she suddenly looked much older than her apparent 16 years, and there were shadows in her eyes I didn't want to challenge. Why did you send her? She hooked a thumb toward Mary. To drag me off the ghost roads and into whatever you living people are trying to do to each other this time. I've got shit to do, little Annie, and my thumb didn't bring me here. I need to ask you about rout witches. Rose went still. Rout witches are common as humans with magic go. That's a very qualified statement. Maybe 1 person in 1,000 has the potential to become a rout witch, and most will lose or bury that potential before they hit their teens. I don't know what the actual numbers are, but if more than 1 person in 10,000 can actually hear the highway sing, I'll eat my skates. It's commonly understood that most, if not all, road ghosts, ghosts like Rose, were or could have become rout witches when they were alive. Not only that, their natural habitat brings them into regular contact with the rout witches, whether they want it to or not. Rout witches and road ghosts represent one of the frontiers where the living and the dead collide, no matter how hard they try to keep themselves separate. And quite honestly, most of them don't seem to try at all.
I don't know what you're expecting me to tell you, said Rose stiffly. I'm not a rout witch. Even if I could have been, once, that kind of magic belongs to the living. I haven't been among the living in a long, long time.
I know, I said. I glanced to Celia before looking back to Rose, and saying, in a careful tone, Someone is siphoning off my magic, Aunt Rose. I can't start fires. I can barely feel the fire. It's being drained away, and someone stole Sam's luck, which meant that when I touched him, the siphon took the energy that lets him transform. I gave him some luck back, but when I tried to take a slice from Annie to supplement it, whatever's been draining her...
Wait, what?
Celia's head snapped around as she stared at me.
What do you mean, magic?
I'm a sorcerer, I said with a shrug.
Surprise!
She sets shit on fire. It's pretty sexy, said Sam.
Too much information, monkey man, said Mary.
Rose blinked. Rose snorted. And then, without further ado, Rose burst out laughing. She pulled her hands out of her pockets and put them over her eyes, bending slowly forward until her elbows were resting on her knees and her entire body was shaking with the effort of continuing to breathe.
which was honestly just dramatic since she was already dead. Sam leaned a little closer to me, careful to keep from touching my skin as he asked, quietly, "Is she okay?" "Rose has a weird sense of humor," I replied, not bothering to lower my voice. I glared at my dead aunt instead. "Which is fine, except for the part where it gets in the way of her getting on with things and telling me what I need to know."
Oh, man. Oh, Annie. Oh, jeez. I want to be there when your parents find out about this one.
Rose straightened up, wiping phantom tears from her eyes.
"If I promise not to tell them about him, will you promise to call me before you take him home to meet them? Please?"
"Yes, but you need to tell me about rat witches," I said. "Am I the only one upset by the idea of her?" Celia pointed at me. "Having the power to set things on fire with her mind?" Rose shrugged. "Matches are cheap. Setting fires is good for a parlor trick, but it's not as useful as it sounds. Are you asking whether a rat witch could steal your magic, Annie?"
"Yes," I said.
"No." Rose shook her head. "That's not how rat witches work. I couldn't steal your luck either. Those aren't road concepts. I can't take them."
"What can take them?"
asked Sam. "Excuse me?"
"You said luck and magic aren't road concepts, so rat witches can't take them," said Sam. "That makes it sound like there's something they can take. What can they take?"
"Distance," said Rose. "Rat witches can steal distance." I frowned.
"Meaning what, exactly?"
"Distance is potential, and potential is power," said Rose. "If you walk 100 miles, that's 100 miles of power slathered all over your skin. A good rat witch can peel that away from you. It's the basic driving force of the snake cults, only less scaly and less stupid."
"I knew that part," I said. "I've heard of rat witches using distance. It's the main power behind most of their spells, but I've never heard of them stealing it before."
"That's because ethical rat witches won't," said Rose firmly. "Apple won't let them."
Sam put up a hand.
"Who's Apple?"
he asked, with the air of a man who'd gone wading in the shallows, only to discover that there was a whole deep ocean waiting to devour him.
"She's the current queen of the rat witches. She holds court on the Ocean Lady, and she'll kick your ass from here to Tuesday morning if she thinks you're breaking her rules. Not a nice woman necessarily, but a fair one, and a reasonably kind one when it comes to that. The rat witches could have done worse."
Rose shook her head.
"Stealing distance is like stealing anything. It's a violation. They'd have to rip it off of a person. Unless they could make it a trade somehow, and even that would be difficult. The road thrives on fair exchange."
"Meaning?" I prompted.
"Meaning, I get flesh from the loan of a coat, and a phantom rider gets freedom from the length of a road, and everything balances. If a rat witch wants distance from the living, they would normally need to make it part of a barter. I'll give you this if you give me that. It's hard to do that accidentally."
A cold feeling appeared in the pit of my stomach. I felt myself go very still,
the hair on my arms standing on end.
"Sam," I said, and turned to face him, only him, focusing on the lines of his face until I couldn't see anyone else, not even in my peripheral vision. It needed to be only him, because this was my fault.
"Can I see your ticket?"
Sam blinked. Understanding bloomed in his eyes, spreading to cover his entire expression, wiping everything else away.
"Yeah,"
he said, and dipped his hand into his pocket. He put the ticket on the table like it was a dead rat, something to be dropped as quickly and as cleanly as possible. He pulled his fingers away almost as instantly, as if he was afraid lingering would give me the opportunity to touch him again. That hurt. Not as much as the realization of what must have happened, but it still hurt. I picked up the ticket, turning it over. The fine print on the back was as dense and tight-packed as I remembered. Turning my body toward Rose, I read aloud, "This ticket is provided under the auspices of Lowry Entertainment, Inc., and cannot be transferred or resold once activated.
Acceptance of this ticket constitutes agreement to be filmed, photographed, and interviewed for future marketing purposes while on Lowry property. Acceptance of this ticket is perpetual and binding. All clauses can and will be exercised at the discretion of Lowry Entertainment, Inc. No refunds or returns will be entertained. My mouth was dry. I paused and swallowed, resisting the urge to close my eyes. There's a quote under that, from one of the early Monty Mule cartoons. If you're lucky enough to be lucky, share the luck around. Rose snapped her fingers. And there it is. Oh, my sweet Zeus. Celia put her head on the table. I think I'm going to be sick. Sam looked between us and scowled. Now's where someone explains to me in small words, or I get pissed. When you took the ticket, you gave Lowry permission to take your luck. Rose stepped forward and snatched the ticket out of my hand. Or tried to, anyway. In the absence of a coat, her fingers passed straight through the paper. She scowled. Mary! I'm not your maid, said Mary. She moved to stand next to Rose, gesturing for me to hand over the ticket. I did. Rose transferred her scowl to the other ghost. They're both dead, but the rules governing them are very different, and while I wouldn't want to be the one to say that one was better off than the other, watching Rose struggle to interact with the living world when she didn't have a coat was sometimes a strong vote in Mary's favor. Although unlike Mary, Rose doesn't answer to a malicious and sometimes predatory force of the universe. Checks and balances in all things, I suppose. Is that going to take Mary's luck now? Asked Sam. No, the ticket's non-transferable, said Rose, sounding distracted. She leaned forward, scowling at the words for a moment before straightening, shaking her head and announcing, You work for assholes. You know that, right, Timmy?
Timmy? Asked Celia.
My full name's Antimony, I said, frowning at Rose. I sort of know that, but why do you say so? Because taking one of their theme park tickets grants them unlimited consent to take your luck whenever you're on Lowry property. Do you know how much shit Lowry owns? They're no Disney, but I'm pretty sure they own an airport. You're fucked. You take one of those and stuff it in your wallet as a pretty souvenir, and it doesn't matter if it's 6 years later. They can activate it and steal whatever they want from you. Rose shook her head. She looked disgusted. She also looked distantly impressed, like she was fighting her own desire to admire their work. A route witch didn't write this, but a route witch helped. It's very close to the standard distance exchange. I'll give you this, you give me that. Everybody walks away happy. I put my head in my hands. When Sam took the ticket, he agreed to the fine print, and now Lowry gets to take his luck. Not if we burn the ticket, said Mary calmly. I lifted my head and peered at her. Aren't you worried about your luck? It's non-transferable, and I'm dead, she said. I have a different kind of luck now. Isn't that right, Celia? She turned her open highway eyes toward our hostess. Celia sucked in a startled breath, sitting up a little straighter.
Yes, ma'am, she said.
Any incongruity in a woman nearly 10 years my senior, addressing a teenager as ma'am, was washed away by the empty roads of Mary's eyes. No living jink can touch ghost luck. Dead ones can touch living luck, but we don't talk about them much. You shouldn't, Mary agreed. If you did, even the people who ought to be your allies would join the Covenant in hunting you down. Some power shouldn't belong to anybody. Annie.
Yes, Aunt Mary?
You need to get the hell away from Lowryland. Whatever these people are doing, it's not right. It's not good. And it's going to get a lot more people hurt than it already has.
You're right, I said. But I'm not going.
Everyone stopped. In the case of Mary and Rose, they stopped so perfectly, so completely, that they might as well have been pictures painted on the air. Sam and Celia just froze. They were still alive, and I took comfort in that fact. Sometimes it can be awkward being the only living person in a room. Sam recovered first.
If I were allowed to touch you right now, I'd be slinging you over my shoulder and running for the door, he growled. Why the hell don't you want to leave?
Because you're not allowed to touch me right now, I said.
He looked at me blankly. So did the others. I sighed.
The luck theft doesn't target employees, I said. We don't get tickets like guests do. We have our passes, and we're supposed to keep our ID badges on us at all times. I'm willing to bet that there's some kind of a counter charm built into the plastic to keep us from being affected if we do pick up a ticket for some reason, or we'd be dealing with a rash of dead janitors. They couldn't be stealing luck from employees. There was no way they'd have been able to cover for that many accidents.
So?
Said Sam. So employees are getting hurt. It started recently, and it's getting worse. People died in the parade collapse. I took a deep breath. This began when Fern found the dead man outside the Midsummer Night's Scream. The people who would know said that... They said he'd been unlucky. The cut that killed him was a fluke. So, call him a possible consequence of the normal luck theft. He got his luck swiped, and then he got into a fight, and what should have been a pretty standard tussle turned into murder.
This isn't explaining why you need to stay, sweetie, said Mary, sounding more like my babysitter than she had in years.
If anything, this is explaining why you need to go. Because it was after that man died that the cabal running Lowryland found out I existed, I said. They're stealing my magic. They said they would train me. And instead, they've been using me like a battery. Employees didn't start getting hurt until I waltzed in and dropped an untrained, uneducated magic user in their laps. They're using me to boost their effects, and people are dying. We can't leave until I figure out how to stop them and get my magic back. I had lived for years without fire in my fingers, and when it had started to develop, I'd wished it gone with everything I had. Now, I finally had someone willing to take it away from me, and all they wanted in exchange was more than anyone had the right to ask me to give. Lowryland owed a lot of people a lot of luck, and I was going to make sure the bills were paid. I owed the dead that much. They had been hurt, however inadvertently, because of me. Mary sighed. Why the hell did I instill a sense of responsibility in you? Biggest mistake I ever made. You wanted me to be the best that I could be, I said.
Well, the best you can be is a pain in my ass, she said.
I turned to Celia. Can Sam stay here until his strength comes back and he can shift again?
Yes, of course, said Celia. And
fuck that idea,
said Sam at the same time, so that their words piled on top of each other in a complicated heap. I frowned at him.
You can't be near me until your luck comes back.
No, I can't be near you and human until you stop being a magical energy vacuum cleaner. But you keep saying you don't need me to be human, so who the fuck cares?
Sam gave me a pointed look.
Unless you were lying.
I didn't hesitate. I leaned forward and kissed him, deeply enough to get my point across. Sam kissed me back, and I would have been a fool not to feel the relief in the action, or the way his shoulders relaxed, letting his body settle a little deeper into his chair, making a space for me to fall into. Mary cleared her throat.
I'd say get a room, but you might, she said.
Can we focus?
Sorry, I said, sitting up.
Sam beamed at her.
Not sorry, he said.
Didn't think you were, said Mary. Sam, you understand that it's not safe.
If it's not safe for me, it's not safe for her, he said. I don't have to go out in public. Both her roommates know I'm not human. I can sleep on the couch if I need to, give my luck time to grow back, and shield me from the sucking... whatever. What I can't do is walk away and leave her alone again. Don't ask me to.
And this way you don't have to feel bad about not calling my parents, I said. I'll have backup. Celia can even drive us back to the apartment. Maybe Megan and Fern will have some luck to spare.
Saints preserve me from the living, said Mary, rolling her eyes ceilingward.
All right. Since it seems like you've thought of everything, can you just promise me that you'll be careful?
Nope, I said.
When a price promises to be careful, that's when we get dead.
Speaking of dead, said Rose. It's been fun seeing you again, Timmy. Good luck defeating the evil luck-sucking empire. But if this is Route Witch doing, I'm not sticking around to find out what they'll do to a girl like me.
It was the sensible thing to do. Rose has been a hitchhiking ghost for so long that she's crossed the continent dozens, if not hundreds, of times, and the spells she'd fuel would be terrifying. I smiled wanly. "Thanks for coming, Aunt Rose," I said. "Anytime, Squirt," she said, and was gone, vanishing from the world as easily as she'd appeared. Something wrapped around my ankle. I didn't need to look down to know that it was Sam's tail. "All right," I said. "Let's fix this." Chapter 19. You don't owe the world anything. That's why you should try to make it better, no matter what. A lack of obligation does not mean a lack of mercy. Evelyn Baker. A shitty company apartment 5 miles outside of Lakeland, Florida. Getting ready for a war. Explaining the situation to Fern and Megan had been easier than I'd expected. Maybe it was showing up with a fury who couldn't transform, or maybe it was the dead woman offering to draw flowcharts. Mostly, I think, it was Celia, who looked human and wasn't human, and hadn't asked for anything they could measure or perceive. I sat on the couch with my hands tucked between my knees, wondering how I could have been foolish enough to think I could get something for nothing, that a little training would be enough to stop the fire from consuming everything around me, and that all I'd have to pay for it would be my time. It had been a beautiful promise and a perfectly tailored trap, and I had walked into it with my eyes wide open. The cushion beside me barely dented as Fern sat down. On the other side of the room, Celia was taking a finger scoop of good luck from Megan and wiping it on Sam, who bore it with furry, put-upon dignity. "You okay?" asked Fern, bumping my shoulder with hers. I wanted to tell her to be careful. I wanted to tell her that there was a hole in my heart pulling away the energy of the people around me. I didn't. She already knew that. It had been a part of the explanation of the situation. And unlike Sam, she hadn't had her luck ripped away. She was safe from me, as long as she was employed by Lowryland. Instead, I ducked my head, offering her a weary smile, and said, "I've been better." "You don't look like you've eaten in, hours," she said. "Probably because I haven't." Celia gave us some lemonade. I leaned back on the couch. Megan was wiping the spit off her forearm. Sam was flexing his hands, looking around the room like he was trying to decide where to go without risking bumping into me. Having him here and not being able to touch him was almost worse than not having him here at all. Only almost. Being able to see him, to know that he was, well, not okay, but at least alive, at least breathing, that was better than anything as simple as physical contact. "Lemonade isn't food," said Fern disapprovingly. "We could order pizza." "Pizza's good," I agreed. Fern took that as consent. She turned to the rest of the room. "Anybody up for pizza?" she called. "Better make that too," said Celia. "Sam's body is trying to rebuild luck and energy at the same time. He's going to eat like a teenager." "I already eat like a teenager," said Sam. "I'm a growing monkey." "Don't grow too much more, or you'll be morally obligated to climb the Empire State Building," said Megan, looking him up and down. He waved it off with a sweep of his hand. "Nah, I don't like blondes." The look he shot in my direction made it very clear that brunettes were another matter. My cheeks reddened, but I held to my dignity, sitting up a little straighter and saying, "We need to figure out what we're doing about this cabal and about the luck thefts." "They don't have a jink working for them, so you don't need me," said Celia. "If you sneak me into the park without expecting me to touch one of those tickets, I can try to rebalance the luck of anyone who's been affected, but that's about as far as I can go." "It's better than nothing," I said. "Thank you for being willing to help." "There's some self-interest here," she said. "If the Covenant ever heard there had been issues with inexplicably missing luck in Florida, they'd probably come for another purge. Couldn't live with myself if I'd been in a position to prevent that and had chosen to do nothing." I couldn't stop a small, grim chuckle.
You've just described the motivation of everything my family has done in the last 100 years, I said.
Then I understand you a little better, she said.
Producing her phone from her pocket, she said,
I'll go order the pizza,
and retreated into the hall. Megan looked at me, expression calm, snakes hissing wildly all around her face.
We must practically seem like statues to you, I blurted.
She blinked, painted on eyebrows rising, before she smiled in sudden understanding.
It was the source of a lot of early cultural confusion, she admitted. Our hair always gives our feelings away unless we cover it, and for a Gorgon to cover their heads in private is a grave insult. We didn't understand that humans could stand there with their heads uncovered and tell us lies and be believed.
That makes sense, I said softly. Treated the wounded after the parade collapsed. I held hands. I listened to people asking if we'd seen their children. I'm just a resident. I shouldn't have been doing half the things I was doing, but the hospital was overwhelmed and we had to take care of everyone. Whoever's using you to boost their luck theft, they're killing people now. I'm in this until it's over. You should know that. Megan's voice remained calm, and her snakes grew more and more agitated. Whatever I can do, I'll do.
Me too, said Fern.
Me three, said Sam.
He flexed his hands again before scowling.
I still can't change, but feel like I'll be able to soon. It itches.
Well, don't touch me again until your luck's grown back enough to protect you, I said. He looked hurt. I shook my head. We need you at your best. That means fast and sturdy and capable of blending into a crowd. Right now, you're not blending anywhere outside of a comic book convention.
I've never been to one of those.
Then when all this is over, I'll take you to one.
When all this is over.
He paused, looking at me seriously.
Are you gonna go home when this is over?
I slumped into the couch.
I can't.
Sam looked like he was going to protest. I raised my hand, cutting him off. Not, I don't want to, Sam. I can't. Problem that has me running hasn't gone away yet. I just ran into a different problem. Lowryland is being controlled by unethical human magic users who are harvesting luck from their guests because who the fuck knows why? Because they're power-hungry assholes? But they're not the Covenant. If we beat them, that doesn't magically make the Covenant go away. And it doesn't magically make it safe for me to go back to my family.
Just means I find another place to run. I always wanted to be a member of the A-Team, said Sam philosophically.
I blinked at him.
What? If you're still running, I'm coming with you, he said. No offense, but this I can do it on my own, just watch bullshit hasn't worked out too well. So I figure it's time we try a little we have vigorous sex in every cheap motel between here and Maine bullshit. At least that'll be more fun.
I'm coming too, said Fern. Not for the sex part. I have headphones.
I'm not, said Megan.
No offense, Annie. I didn't go to medical school and put my family in debt to run off and play medic for your weird fugitive adventures. I just want to survive what the hell is going on at Lowryland and make it home to see my parents. You being a Price makes sense. Sweet Medusa, does it ever. But it doesn't exactly encourage me to stay around you. Even if you might be able to get me your brother's autograph.
No offense taken, I said. I stood. I need weapons.
Be still my heart, said Sam.
I wrinkled my nose at him as I walked out of the living room, into the hall, and past Celia, still on her phone, to my bedroom. When I'd fled from the burning carnival, I'd been as close to devoid of weaponry as any Price ever got. I'd been running virtually naked for the better part of a year. Back home, I would have had an arsenal at my disposal. All the knives, guns, and more esoteric weaponry that a girl could want. Having a family obsessed with combat techniques and staying alive, and a grandmother whose idea of an appropriate gift for a little girl was a box of caltrops, had done a lot to distort my idea of what normal levels of weaponry were. Working at Lowryland meant no weapons, ever. Because normal people don't feel the need to hide 20 throwing knives in their clothing before they leave the house.
Staff didn't have to go through the metal detectors, but accidents happen. Lord, do accidents happen. And I had no faith in my ability not to stab someone who got overly aggressive, which happened sometimes on days when the rides weren't behaving, and the weather wasn't behaving, and the tourists felt like they needed somebody to complain to. So I'd taken to keeping most of my paltry supply of weaponry in a box under the bed, where I could reach it if I needed it, but otherwise wouldn't be tempted to start carrying it again. I knelt. I pulled the box out. I looked at the heap of throwing knives. Two full sets. One provided by the Covenant as part of my cover story for the carnival. One provided by the carnival once I'd started working there. And other, more slightly makeshift weaponry. Marbles and sharpened jacks and hand-braided wire garrets. I took a deep breath. That didn't seem like enough, so I took another. Focusing on the homecoming those knives represented. No more Timpani Brown, Covenant trainee. No more Melody West, ex-cheerleader and Lowryland employee. Just Antimony Price. Annie. The girl I had been born to be. The girl with fire in her fingers and no real sense of where she stood in the structure of a family that had an heir and a spare and her. Youngest child who didn't know who or what she should grow up to be. Or maybe I wasn't that Annie anymore either. I knew who I wanted to grow up to be. I was going to protect my family, and I was going to protect my friends, and I was going to learn how to use what I'd inherited from my grandfather, even if it meant joining my grandmother in her endless, quixotic quest to bring him home. I had a purpose now. Maybe it wasn't the purpose I'd been expecting, but it was mine. That made it good enough. One by one, the knives vanished into my clothing, settling against my skin in the old, familiar patterns, made new again by time and distance from the last time I'd been allowed to strap them on. I wrapped the garrote around my wrist like a friendship bracelet and filled my pockets with problems for other people to deal with. When I was done, I was 15 pounds heavier and felt 100 pounds lighter, like I had borrowed Fern's shifting relationship with density. The last thing I did was pull the knife from under my pillow and slide it into my sock. And I was back. I was myself again. The others turned to look at me when I returned to the living room. I held up my hands, turning them back and forth to show that they were empty. "Nothing up my sleeves," I said. A flick of my wrists and I was holding a pair of throwing knives, balanced between my thumbs and forefingers. We live in a world where magic is real and monsters lurk under more than a few beds. But there will always be a place for sleight of hand. Sam grinned. "Does this mean you're ready to get angry?" "I guess it does," I said. The knives disappeared back into my clothing. "I guess it's time for all of us to get angry." The doorbell rang. Megan sat on the couch, picking up the towel she kept there and wrapping it around her head in a quick, practiced motion. The snakes, apparently conditioned to keep still in the dark, coiled and stopped moving, which was good since otherwise the towel would have been pulsing like something out of a horror movie. "Actually, it's time for us to eat pizza," said Celia, walking calmly past me to the door. Sam got up and darted down the hall to my bedroom, out of sight. I offered Fern a quick, tight smile and went to the kitchen for plates. The thing about riding gallantly into battle is that unless something is actively trying to kill you right now, it's probably a good idea to eat first. We fell upon those two pizzas like we were starving, which, to be honest, several of us were. It had been a long time since our gingerbread at Lowryland, and baked goods do not a balanced diet make. Megan, despite having mouse-eating snakes attached to her head, is a vegetarian. Out of respect for her dietary needs, one of the pizzas was a virtual garden of plants that can be baked in an oven without turning completely disgusting. The other pizza was a meat lover special. Megan ate the first, Fern ate the second, and I slapped two pieces together to form a perfectly balanced sandwich, a trick which Sam and Celia quickly emulated. Celia had also been smart enough to order several 2-liter bottles of Mountain Dew to go with the food.
Celia was rapidly approaching the status of my favorite. For a little while, there was no room for conversation. There was only room for chewing, something that's universal across all species, no matter what their diets entail. Megan stole bits of sausage from the meat lover's pizza and fed it to her hare, while chewing on her own veggie-enriched slice. Sam double-fisted his pizza slice sandwiches, eating with a speed and efficiency which I frankly admired, even as I kept a hand free for my drink. The pizzas were nearly gone when Sam paused, hiccuped, and turned human again. We all blinked at him.
"Huh," said Celia, who had only seen him in his fury form. "You're actually kind of cute."
"Thanks," said Sam.
"I think he's cute both ways," I said, earning myself a quick grin.
"Does this mean my luck's back to normal?" asked Sam.
"Not quite," said Celia. "I know you're going to glare at me, but if I were you, I'd avoid touching Annie for a while longer. Give it a day. Most of the luck I lathered onto you was good, because why the hell bother starting someone out with a big load of bad? Seems to me you've got enough bad going already. And now you're starting to pick up ambient luck, which is more mixed. Once your shell gets back to normal, you'll feel safe to do whatever you want.
By then, hopefully I won't suck as hard," I said. Fern choked on her pizza. I blinked at her before I felt myself turn bright red.
"Oh, my God, you have a filthy mind," I squawked, and threw a napkin at her. That was the trigger. We were tired, we were tense, and we were about to go into a fight against people whose abilities we didn't fully know or understand. People get weird when they're looking down the barrel of something like that. Fern batted the napkin away and threw her pizza crust at me. I snatched it out of the air and threw it back, only to be hit in the side of the face by a pillow flung by Megan. She was laughing, and her snake seemed to be doing the same, their mouths gaping open in silent, serpentine smiles. Celia grabbed another pillow, holding it in front of herself and doing an admirable job of compacting her long limbs into a complicated curl.
"I'm fragile," she yelped.
Sam hit her with an empty soda bottle. The living room descended into chaos. Fern grabbed a pillow in each hand and bounded into the air, dropping her personal density until she was practically floating. Sam's tail wrapped tight around her ankle, and she yelped before she realized that he was swinging her at Megan. Her yelp transformed into a maniacal laugh, both pillows raised to strike. Megan ducked, but still got a mouthful of upholstery for her trouble, Fern aiming low to avoid hitting her glasses. I laughed too, dropping to the floor and beginning to chuck wadded up napkins every which way, keeping the air full of projectiles, which Fern kept batting aside in her determined quest to smack Megan a second time. Celia flicked her fingers every time it looked like my napkins were going to hit her, sending them careening in odd directions as some gust of wind from Fern's flight or other atmospheric disturbance knocked them out of true. My aim hadn't been that bad since I was a very small child, but I didn't manage to land a hit on her once. It was fantastic. Play is an essential part of learning what the body is capable of, and while we were all just blowing off steam, I was learning more of what our group was tactically capable of than I could possibly have asked. The only factor that was missing was Megan's stony gaze, and even when Fern was hitting her with the pillows, she was being careful not to knock our resident Gorgon's glasses off, which mattered. "Time out," I called. Sam stopped swinging Fern. Robbed of her momentum, she drifted slowly down toward the floor. Celia peeked out from behind her pillow. "Truce," she said. "Not quite," I said.
"Megan, I know you can't paralyze Fern. What about Celia and Sam?"
"I don't know," she said, blinking at me as she wiped a smear of tomato sauce off one cheek. Her hair writhed and settled, a few locks drawing back in curious curves. "I've never looked directly at a Jink or a Fury before."
"Got it." I looked at Sam and Celia. Celia, who in her own weird way knew more about the cryptid community than Sam did. He had been raised by his human grandmother, who had always done her best, but who had been missing some essential facts about his biology, grimaced.
"I don't know either," she said, in a tone which implied that she really wasn't looking forward to the next part.
I don't suppose we can say probably and leave it at that?
Not the best plan, I said. If we need to get you sunglasses, we should probably know that before things get messy.
I won't turn you to stone unless I'm making an effort, and I promise not to make an effort, said Megan, in a tone that was probably